The wait has ended. PGAtour.com now has Fantasy One and Done. No other fantasy format has gained as much attention as this one. Here's how it works. It's totally free. Select one golfer per tournament. Once he's played, he's unavailable for the rest of the year. Sign up now at fantasygolf.pgatour.com. You have to be willing to change to get better. That's why guys like Phil Mickelson, Patrick Reed, and Daniel Berger changed to the Callaway's new Chrome Soft ball. See what they do at callawaygolf.com. Chrome Soft, it's the ball that changed the ball. Let's get to it.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a special Masters preview edition of the No Laying Up podcast. Joining us for what I believe is the 10th time, double digits, from CBS, Kyle Porter. Kyle, is that kind of a sad thing, or is this a good thing? I don't know. Are we celebrating this occasion?
Is this like my winning a 10th major? I've gotten to.
I think it's slightly different. I think it's slightly different than that.
You know what I'm doing right now? I'm sitting here. I'm getting a little work done, kind of preparing for the Masters. I just went down the rabbit hole of Phil Mickelson backwards over the head flop shots on YouTube.
You're not watching the 03 Masters highlights right now?
No. That I think they've erased all the footage of that playoff. I think it's gone. I'm fired up for the Masters. I'm fired up for Phil making another run. There's so many storylines. It's going to be a blast.
Well, we're recording this on Wednesday, March 29th. We're not going to post this probably until the Monday week of, but I'm going to be out of the country for the next few days. So I needed to get it in now. I'm really not that well prepared. I didn't even get to watch the match play last week. I did listen back to you and I did a preview podcast of the Masters last year, and my take on who I thought was going to win was Spieth because I picked him before the season began. Guess what? I'm not even going to refresh that take. I'm not even going to do anything different with it. I'm picking Spieth because I picked him last year. That's why I think he's the 2017 winner.
You're not concerned about the Hideto Tanahara loss at the Match Play Championship?
It was devastating. It was it's clearly a direct translation to how things are going to play out in a major championship. But no, I think I was feeling very confident with the pick. I'm still confident with it, but I feel, and I know that Day was really hot going into the Masters last year, and it's very easy to look at the number one player, the favorite going into it, and it's easy to point and say, I don't think they're going to win. And I think you and I agreed on that last year. We just weren't feeling it for Day, even though he was peaking about his I think he won Match Play and Bay Hill leading up into it. This DJ run feels more like a guy that can't be beaten than Day's run did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, here's the thing, and I think you and I align. I sort of flipped my ideology on this about the Masters at some point during, I think, like the second round last year. But I think the Masters runs through Jordan Spieth every year for the foreseeable future. And that doesn't mean he's going to win them all. Like he might win one or two or however many more. But I up until last year, for the past few years, I had thought that it was kind of a Bubba thing. Like, mm-hmm. I thought it kind of ran through him. But if you look, and we've talked about this, but if you look more closely at Bubba's record at Augusta and at the majors, he's only got the two wins at the Masters, and he doesn't have a lot else.
I don't think he has another top 25. I could be wrong there, but it's not. Definitely doesn't have another top 10.
Yeah, and so he's all or nothing at Augusta, and he's been, much to your chagrin, he's been all twice. But with Spieth, it's just he's gonna have you know, Tiger had his times where he's finished 40th or whatever, but he's gonna be so tough to beat there every year. And that doesn't mean that Dustin Johnson's not gonna win it. But despite the run that he's on, this three in a row, trying to become the first, I think, since Tiger to win four in a row, and like I think he's just the 11th guy since 1980 to win three in a row. So it's been an unreal run. But despite all of that, despite Jordan Spieth losing to Hideto Tanahara in the match play, it runs through him. It just has to.
I have so much to say in response to what you just said. First of all, you've been practicing pronouncing Hideto Tanahara. Okay, that's one. Like how you said, something like the 11th player since 1980 to do that when it's clearly something you've written about. Third of all, Bubba now uses pink putt-putt balls. I'm not fearing him at all at Augusta. And fourth of all, I went on the hot take, the golf.com hot take podcast last week, and I declared that Spieth is going to win this year by four, and he's going to win, and he's going to win four more green jackets to a total of five.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of green jackets. I mean,
gotta be bold, baby.
Well, it's interesting because he's gonna be, I think, a guy like Mickelson who gets 25 shots at it.
Yeah,
you know, 27 shot, whatever it is. He played in his first one at the age of 21. I don't know if anybody knew that. He was 21 in 2014.
People forget that.
We only heard that 8 million times. So he's gonna have several runs at it, and I think that's different than a guy like, well, like Tiger. I mean, and even somebody like Rory, who we've talked about, you know, it doesn't feel like he's going to play at the level that he's at until he's 46. It does feel like that with Spieth. And so I think Spieth is somebody who's going to win it at a young age, who could win it at an old age. So five sounds like a ton, and it is a ton. It'd be the second most ever. But it could happen. I mean, are you even going to have Masters podcasts in the future? You're just going to say, I'm picking Spieth and then just head off to England to play some golf.
I'm just going to dub in this audio every year for the Masters going forward. But, you know, I think, I don't know. It's not, I don't know exactly what makes his game fit Augusta so well. I want to say it's his very strong iron play. He was an excellent iron player in 2015. He had a poorer season striking his irons last year, but during Augusta week he did not. He hit some loose shots, but he was pin seeking for most of the event.
Yeah.
I forget where I heard this recently, but someone saying, you know, he didn't even play very well last year. I don't buy that at all. I mean, there was a sense of kind of a, he didn't have like total confidence and commitment when he was standing over the ball, and it eventually caught up with him with the shots on 12, obviously, but he did hit bad shots, but he hit so many really good shots and made so many 8-footers. And that's the thing, when I watch him putt those greens, when he's got anything between 8 and 15 feet, I feel like the ball is going in. I feel like he's very confident in his read. He's committed to it. And I don't know. I don't have that confidence kind of with any other player. I think putting does get a bit overrated at Augusta, to be honest. I think people always say that the guy who putts the best wins there. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's the guy that gets it closest to the hole with after two shots is probably the guy that's gonna be there at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Sunday. But I don't know, man. It's just I think like he led, I think seven straight rounds, and obviously
yep.
didn't lead at the end of Sunday last year. But I don't know. I don't think there's gonna be any hangover for it. I hope it's not a story that gets ran into the ground this week. I don't know.
Good luck with that.
I know, but I feel like the Masters like helps dictate how the broadcast is presented in that way. You know what I mean? I feel like it's not like free reign for announcers and whatnot to talk about whatever they want to talk about. Am I right in saying that?
Well, I think that the Masters is the one tournament that sort of like the tournament is bigger than the players, if that makes sense.
Yep.
You get that with the other majors a little bit, specifically probably with the Open, but a lot of times the players are bigger than the tournament. I mean, you know, especially with Tiger and Phil and guys like that. So I do think there's something there. Man, I will never forget his, just going back to Spieth's second round in 2015, he hit like three flagsticks, it was just unbelievable his iron play there. And I don't have any like empirical data, but it just feels like he hits his long irons and his fairway woods really accurately, and just he sets himself up so well to make birdies, and then when he does get in trouble, he doesn't make the bogeys. He makes quads, but he doesn't make bogeys. So you know, I just I mean, how much differently are we thinking about this, though, if he doesn't make that quad on 12 last year? Like, going, you know, can Spieth get the three-peat, you know, whatever. And it's almost like, I think we did this a little bit last year, but it's almost like he's being overlooked a little, you know? Like, we got DJ, we got the Tiger drama, we got all these other things, and it's like, this dude's never finished third. Like, he's never finished worse than second. And I don't know. I think he's the guy to beat in my mind. I think he will get beat, but I still think you have to go through him to win it.
Well, I'm not letting him fly under the radar, because it's all I've been saying for, I think, since he hit the ball in the water last year on 12, the second one, I said he's going to win next year.
Very courageous of you to stand up for the man who made $50 million last year.
I will die on this hill. I will. I did hear, I don't know if he was asked the question or whatnot, that he, I don't know why this makes headlines, but it said that he's that DJ is the favorite and DJ should be the favorite going into it. I didn't bother clicking the link because I'm fearing that it's like almost as if he's passing off the pressure of being the favorite or something like that. It's one of those questions where you're gonna give the wrong answer according to somebody, no matter what you say on it. But I mean, I think it's fair to say that DJ, I don't know. I think Spieth should be the favorite, but just because I don't have any DJ memories at the Masters. I said this to Jaime Diaz. I remember him hitting that shot around the tree at 15 last year, I think in the third round. I honestly don't think I have another one. Do you? I know he's finished T6, T4 the last two Masters, but I never have thought of him as a guy that can win here. Should we be thinking differently this year?
Well, two things on that. My only memory really is the round, I think it was 15, when he made three eagles in the same round, which was just outrageous. And he, I mean, there's not a par five for him out there. They're all par fours or three and a halves or whatever. And I think the biggest thing for me with DJ, and I was thinking about this during match play, is there's such, I think he's like 30th or 31st in strokes gained putting this year. And it just, obviously the driver and the iron play and just his approach, I mean, he's ridiculous, but his short game and when he stands over like a 5 foot putt, I used to think like this could be a three putt, and now I'm surprised when he doesn't make it. You know what I'm saying?
Like, exactly.
I have so much more confidence in it. He still is not, like, if you look at, he's missed several putts inside of even 3 feet, I think, this so far this season. So it's not a it's not necessarily a statistical thing, but I don't know. I just watch him, and I just have a lot more confidence in him canning short putts. And I thought Jaime Diaz said this really well in your podcast last week, but just talking about Rory sometimes having like loose shots and leaving, Patrick Reed's the king of I left about 14 strokes out there, you know, should have shot a 57, but the two guys that actually do it are Rory and DJ, and DJ seems to be tightening that up a little bit. I do still think that he leaves a couple out there every once in a while, but I don't know. I just have a lot more confidence in him hitting 4 and 5 foot putts. And I think that's something that, you know, we'll see at Augusta if that's actually true. But he's going to be there on the weekend. I don't see any scenario in which he's not.
As Tron says, you're a feel player. You don't need stats to back that up. I'm a feel player when it comes to stats. With DJ, everyone always said, like, once this guy figures it out, there's no one that can match him. He's the most talented guy out here. If he ever puts it all together, you know, no one's going to be able to touch him. I heard that for so long that I kind of put it in that, like, what if category that is not really ever going to happen. So, like,
yeah.
Kind of like the, yeah, once Sergio wins a major, it's like, all right, I mean, how many years have we been doing this now and it hasn't happened yet? So I didn't think it was actually going to ever fully happen with DJ. I mean, let's be honest here. I picked him to win the U.S. Open last year. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you only tweeted that like 18 times.
Oh, we're going to round down to 18. Okay, that's fine. I'll take that. But I mean,
I was going to say it during the U.S. Open.
During the when he got into the lead before he had even won it, I think he had gotten so, like, this point, or I don't want to say too far into his career. I think he's what, 32. I think that's kind of far into your career with that talent level to really have the breakout. And I'm not saying guys, you know, into their 30s can't improve, but to make the leap to the clear-cut best player in the world, that's something you don't typically see from somebody who was sloppy for so many years. And his resume before this crazy run was outstanding, like on track to be a Hall of Famer. But like we always said, he's the most talented guy. He just leaves too much out there. I mean, I remember at this time we had a quote unquote big four, and it didn't even include DJ. I mean, the leap he has made is honestly, I don't know, it feels a lot more real and authentic than Day's leap did. Is that crazy to say?
No, here's the thing with DJ, and he talked about, I don't know if you know this, but he's been working on his wedge game.
Whoa.
I don't know.
Is he using any devices to help him with that?
But the thing with him is like, who in modern golf history has not started working on their wedge game until they were 31 years old? Like, if we had known that, like, I don't, you know, we don't like roll around and like, you know, watch DJ practice all the time or whatever. But it paints a much clearer picture of like what's actually taking place, like what's actually happening. So, you know, what else has he not worked on? Like, how much better can he actually get? So you're right in that he's sort of been a late blooming number one player in the world, probably one of the latest ever recently. You know, all the other guys, even Martin Keimer, Rory, guys that have gotten to number one have been pretty young. I guess Luke Donald and Lee Westwood, I don't know if we want to talk about that. But with DJ, like, he just hadn't practiced stuff, which is such a bizarre, like, weird thing to...
Do we fully buy that, though? Like, do we really think he didn't practice it?
Well, I don't think he was, like... Yeah, I think he wasn't as dedicated to his wedge play or short game or whatever as he is now. I really think that.
Yeah, as dedicated, but it's been presented as if he, like, never picked up a wedge and hit it on the range and practiced it. I don't buy that. I definitely...
Is this like Bubba's never had a lesson?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Exactly. That's exactly on that. That's exactly on that. I think he's definitely. Yeah. I think it's maybe a bit overrun and overstated. I mean, there's something to it clearly, because his wedge play is clearly improved. But
yeah, and I guess my point is, like, guys with his kind of talent just learn to max out at an earlier age than he has, and I think that's sort of why we didn't see this coming.
Yeah. A quick break to remind you guys to make sure you're signing up for the No Laying Up and Fried Egg Masters contest. We're going to get a lot of entries. Callaway is helping sponsor the event, and it's totally free to enter. We're going to be giving out some major prizes to the top 10 finishers, perhaps even more, depending on how many entries we get. This is likely to include some Callaway clubs, including the new Epic Driver. There's going to be golf balls, golf bags. The prizes are to be announced later, but again, a reminder, check our Twitter feed. We'll be sharing information about this all week long, Masters Week. Get involved. Special thanks to Callaway for providing the gifts. Again, totally free to enter. Sign up right now. How far down the odds sheet are you looking and picking a winner? Like, what's the furthest down you're willing to go as somebody that has a chance to win? First of all, did you see Danny Willett is 100-1 to win?
Well, I saw Brendan Porat.
Oh my God!
Fire tweet.
We'll do questions later. But Porat's tweet, when I asked for question recommendations, he said recommendations on what Danny Willett should do in Augusta between Friday afternoon and Butler Cabin.
Woo!
Good Lord!
He can hit up that Snoop Dogg festival or whatever he's doing. the Danny Willett thing, it's such a I've thought about this a lot. Like, it's such a random happenstance, like that he won. Like, that I don't know. I would love to go back and look at, I was just, I don't know, thinking about hypotheticals, like, who would have won the most majors if tournaments were only three rounds, and then you can't obviously do this, but who would have won the most if tournaments were five rounds? Like, it's just the fact that it was four rounds and that he had the round of his life at the right time. He wasn't even supposed to be there. His wife had just had a baby, and there's just so many different things. But the guy that I'm looking at, the furthest down is Lee Westwood at 100-1.
What?
Yeah, Lee Westwood, 100-1.
You're taking, oh my God.
I mean, four top tens in his last five appearances at Augusta. Finished tied for second last year. He's been one of the out of the five best guys at Augusta over the last 5 years. I think he's like third. It goes Spieth, DJ, Rose, and then Westwood. So he's four.
So I did this a couple years ago. I did the whole Lee Westwood hasn't finished outside the top 11 at the Masters, blah blah blah. And I think he finished like T66 on me that year. So I'm not going to go down the Westwood Masters thing again. I just can't get the image of the putt at the Ryder Cup out of my head, and I can't imagine. It is kind of a people forget that he finished T2 last year, but yeah. Wow, 100-1. That's actually kind of intriguing at 100-1, just considering how much success he's had there. But I was looking this up the other day. Has he won a PGA Tour event? I think he has, hasn't he?
I don't think so.
No?
There's one of those European guys that...
He has two wins. He won the Freeport McDermott Classic in 1998, and he won the St. Jude Classic in 2010.
Okay, there's somebody like a big name that's European that has not.
Colin Montgomery was one.
Yeah, but there's somebody recent. I'm not even talking about Poulter, who's I don't know if you know this, never won a stroke play event in the
continental U.S. I love how we carve how far we'll stretch it to make a dig at Poulter. Well, he's never won one in North Dakota either.
It is strange. Like if you think about. We always think about the Masters like being this, and we think generally about like this about the majors of just giving us great champions and like delivering the goods and all this stuff. And it's like, we've gotten Charles Schwartzel and Zach Johnson and Danny Willett. Like, is this a, you know, like it just recent history has been kind of weird at Augusta, I feel like.
It is, you know. I'm right there with you in that we usually look at like the top 12 guys or maybe not even that many, and it does almost always produce a really good leaderboard, but I do feel like it kind of happens all at once, and then like the next year we get a complete flop. Like I was looking at 08, was it, when Trevor Immelman won, and 07. I mean, those were some dark times in golf, I think, but like look back at 15 where Spieth won, I think Rose and Mickelson finished second. So I feel it doesn't get spread out very well. There's nothing to that. There's no way of like describing that. But so last year it played a lot more firm. I think there's some rain in the forecast. Have you heard anything about what kind of condition the course is in? Do you think they're going to try to have an event more like last year's than, you know, the soft year before where Spieth set the scoring record?
Real quick, that final leaderboard in 2008, Trevor Immelman, Tiger finished second, but then it was Stuart Sink was on there, Steve Flesch, Robert Carlson, and Andres Romero were all in the top 10. Yikes.
A dark time in golf.
Yeah, it's not great. what the thing last year, it was a little bit fast. It was a lot fast, and it was a little bit dry, but it was also kind of like cold and windy, like strangely, like it was weird. It was chilly. It was very difficult scoring conditions. And so I think that even if you don't get the rain, it's not supposed to be as cold, and I don't think it's supposed to be as windy. So I would be surprised. I wrote this the other day. I would be surprised if the winning score was under or was in the single digits. I mean, historically the winning score is 8 under, but if you look at the last, basically since Zach Johnson won, it's around 11 or 12 under, and I would expect it to return to like 10 or 11 under par this year.
One of my favorite stats from last year is that Spieth made 22 birdies and Willett made 13. Birdies and he won the Masters.
That's like Tiger at the Hero World Challenge last year.
How far do we make it? You brought him up first, 22, 23 minutes in. See, Brandel said he's been practicing.
Yeah, can I make a prediction on here?
Oh, this is what we're doing.
Well, hold on. This is being released on Monday.
Monday, yeah, of next week.
Okay, I'm gonna say that this is gonna be hilarious.
Oh my god.
I'm going to say by the time people hear this, by the time you hear my voice saying this, Tiger Woods will have stepped away from golf indefinitely.
Whoa! Are you gonna make me edit this out if he like commits to
this? No, keep it in there. Keep it in there. I'll wear that. I'm fine with that.
Do you have some inside info?
No inside info. No sources. I am not texting with Nota Begay. I don't know. I feel like I have a premonition.
Wow. Okay. Well, I get what you're going for here, because if he doesn't play, and he's not going to play, there's nothing that's on the horizon that's going to bring him back. I mean, excuse me. I don't know where Brandel is getting his. He's been practicing really hard. Don't rule it out yet. I have not heard one single thing that even is remotely close to that. And I've heard one. I've heard from two good sources. One really good one that he's in bad shape. Like it's in bad shape. And it's and the person that I heard this from would definitely know. So I have not put that out there yet. We're going to find out soon enough. And I'm probably by the time people listen to this, he'll announce probably Friday that he's not playing, I think. But it's not good.
Here's my thing. I think it's such a – it's one thing to be injured, to be hurt, and to not be able to play. But for him to, I presume, not need surgery and to be coming into the Masters and to not be able to actually play it, I think it's such an emotionally and mentally devastating thing that I think that he's just going to say, I'm just going to step away for a while. And he'll just say indefinitely, because I don't think he's going to actually retire or whatever. But I don't know. I just think the reality of not being able to play Augusta is really going to hit him.
All right. Well, for the record, we brought up Tiger before we even really talked about Rory. So I'm ready to transition into that. Are you, first of all, what do you, I don't know, kind of a stupid question, but what do you think of his chances? And I want to also ask, if it rains, how much does that change how you foresee him playing out this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, if it rains, he's going to be just, you know, it could turn into, you know, congressional in 2011. But, Rory is, I think he is, he's obviously, you know, playing well right now, played well at Mexico, played well at Bay Hill. I just think, and he basically said this at Bay Hill. He said, you know, it's the further it goes on, the harder it is. And it's such a thing that's just kind of looming over him. And a lot like Phil at the US Open, he mentioned that as well. Here's my take. I told Tron this when we were down at Bay Hill. I think Rory should fly up to Augusta on Thursday morning. Like fly up from Florida Thursday morning, just hit like 20 balls on the range and just go play. Like I think he'd shoot like 64, 65 and just run away with it on the weekend. Like I just think he's trying so hard to figure out what the formula is, you know, for playing well that week, whether it's, do I play the week before? Do I go up on Saturday? He's trying all these different things. And that's what I would be doing as well. I think he just needs to just blank slate. Don't think about it. Go shoot 64, 65. I mean, we've watched him. Like he's him and DJ, best, most talented guys in the world. Like just go play golf, you know? And I just think it gets a little bit too complicated for him sometimes.
He mentioned that on the podcast, actually. He said something about, I'm thinking maybe I'd be better off showing up the day before and, you know, like treat it like I would any other tournament. I don't get the sense that he's pressing on this too badly. I think, you know, what you said, it gets harder year after year, but I feel like he can adjust to that better year over year. I don't feel like it's a huge storyline right now. I think people have kind of gotten, kind of understand the fact that he doesn't really want to talk about it. He's 27. Is he still 27?
Yeah, he's 27.
27, and we're talking about like the career Grand Slam.
Phil was 7 years away from winning a major.
Yeah, Phil is 19 years older, and he also still hasn't won the career Grand Slam. If this goes on for a decade, yeah, that's worth bringing up every year, I think. He's had, what, two chances at closing the career Grand Slam and not one. Like he's not a 50% odd. He's not going off at 50% odds when he shows up there. So if this goes on even for five more years, it doesn't concern me at all. Winning the Masters is so incredibly hard, despite the fact that I wanted to give Spieth four of them, and I think he's going to win this by four shots. It's really hard. So I don't know. If you're going in expecting one certain player to win and you're going to be disappointed in that player if they don't win, you're approaching this in the wrong, in the entirely wrong way. It's not the way this game is played. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of a good thing that, you know, DJ's Spieth obviously has the Masters history. DJ is on this incredible run. I'm definitely not saying Rory's being forgotten about, but he's not the lead story going into this. I actually said this around the same time last year, almost the exact same thing, that, you know, Day being hot kind of takes a little bit of pressure off of him. And I mean, Rory was in the final group on Saturday, last year, right? And yeah. I mean, he had a horrible day that day, but I think he probably learned from that experience. So I don't know. I feel good about his chances. Just in the little bit that I've talked to him about it, he seems confident. It doesn't seem like the moment is getting to him at all, or the pressure is getting to him at all. And I mean, he knows he's got how many 20 more shots at this. I don't know how long he wants to play, but it's not like he's not going to win one. I don't think for one second that anybody out there thinks he's never going to win the Masters. Like, you've definitely never said those exact words before, have you?
That was performance art. That was on the Hot Take podcast. that was shout out to Sean Zach of golf.com. That was a Hot Take podcast. I said I'm not here to talk about that, Solomon.
You didn't see that one coming, did you?
You are misremembering some stuff, and I don't know. I'm reeling. I'm on tilt right
You're
now.
You're flustered now. You don't even have a take.
So I was reading this article about Ernie Els, really good, in the Augusta Chronicle by Scott Michaud. And Ernie was talking about this is probably going to be his last Masters. I think he's 47. His exemption runs out this year. And he said, you know, looking back over his career at Augusta, he said, and this was the phrase he used. I thought it was really interesting. He said, I fell out of patience with this golf course. And he said, some guys get breaks here and they fall in love with it. And he's like, I sort of went the other way. You know, like I had some things go against me and I kind of fell out of love with it. He's like, I still love the Masters. Just this course just kind of gets to me a little bit. I think the thing with Rory that I go back to is it's so easy to envision him shooting, you know, getting to 16 under and like playing the par fives at 13 under for the week. Like, just I don't know. It's difficult to envision Phil Mickelson winning the U.S. Open right now, you know, and it's just so easy to see him doing it that it almost seems impossible that it wouldn't happen. But who knows? We could be here in 10 years talking about the time that I went on the Hot Take podcast with Sean Zach and it was correct. I don't know.
Well, Ernie is a really interesting one, because I did just kind of take a flip back through old leaderboards. I'd love to do that this time of year and just kind of remember the guys, you know, that finished T4 that you may have never even heard of. Ernie had a stretch from 2000 to 2004 that it's criminal that he didn't win a Masters. He finished second in 2000, T6 in 2001, T5 in 02, T6 in 03, and second to Mickelson's back nine, 31, 20-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole to win the Masters. Like that.
Yep.
And he never was the same at the Masters after that. That's enough to just crush you. And it really did look like he was going to win it that in 2004, despite Phil going on Faraday and being like, hey, Phil, who had not won a major yet, went on Faraday and claimed, like, yeah, I mean, I knew I was going to win. I mean, yeah, after I birdied 12, I knew I was going to win.
Phil's the best. Will you tell me when the Phil gambling memes, or as Bryce Harper calls them, memes, get old? When will that get old?
It'll be years after Phil has passed. And Phil will have bet on what that date is going to be.
I'm so excited for him, like 20 years from now or whatever, hitting the ceremonial tee shot at Augusta and having to dish out money on the tee box in front like to Augusta members, like who bet on whether he hit the fairway or not.
You know who he's going to be dishing money out to? Gary Player. Gary Player is going to be 110 years old doing crunches on the first tee while Phil is teeing off.
True or false, Gary Player and Jordan Spieth will hit ceremonial tee shots at Augusta together.
And Gary will be fist pumping when he outdrives him. I hope he does it again this year. Last year, he gave a clear fist pump when Nicklaus did not hit it by him.
Yeah, he does that like kick, that high kick thing. He's insane.
He's incredible.
He's unbelievable.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He claims he's traveled more miles than anyone else in the world.
And he's hit more. Let's talk about me. I want to talk about me for a second.
Okay.
I was going back and I saw a couple of years ago. I forgot what it was in, but I had a line about Gary Player and something that I wrote, talking about how he's won like 325 events worldwide. And I said, and this is coming from someone who definitely seems like he would keep track of such a thing.
I remember that line. That was one of my favorite of all time.
I was so proud of that.
All right, so let's do our thing also where we make sure we name everyone in the field just in case they win. Because we did that last year, actually. I dismissed Danny Willett winning the tournament specifically. We all know how that worked out. You and I did basically a JT podcast in January where I kind of said I felt like I was too close to the situation to realize how good he was. I'm back. Yeah, I'm the anti-LeVar Ball, basically. I feel like I'm kind of shifting back towards that, and in my head thinking like, "Oh, I mean, come on, he can't win the Masters, can he?" But am I wrong in thinking that?
That he can't win the Masters?
Yeah.
No, I think he can win it. Do we know where he finished last year? I don't even remember.
I think he finished
Top 20.
No. He made the cut almost on the number, and I thought he was going to get to play with Knox. I was rooting for that, and I think he finished, if I remember right, he finished like dead last after making the cut. He finished T39. I'm sorry.
You know, I think Thomas is super interesting. I think he's sort of the poster boy for this group of golfers to where it's almost like they either finish top five or they miss the cut. I mean, if you look at his season so far, and he's talked about this. I think he talked about it with – it might have been my shot with Guy Yoakum in Golf Digest, but just talking about how, like, it's all or nothing. Like, I want to win or – and not that he doesn't care about making cuts, but the older generations have been so just trained to make cuts, to grind out, like, T24s or whatever. And these guys are like, I don't really care if I don't win, and I'm not saying that derogatorily. I think that's a great attitude to have, because, and I think Rory's talked about this. Like you want to either be, you know, you want to be at the very very top, or like it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter finishing like T12 or whatever if you're one of the top 10 or 15 guys in the world, because your schedule, your money, like all that stuff is set. Like you're trying to win golf tournaments. And so I think that, you know, I could see him being in the top five, or I could, you know, or I feel like he's going to miss the cut, you know, like I don't. And if you look at his pattern of tournaments so far this year, he's won three times, but then he's like in between all those, he's missed like three or four cuts. So he's certainly got the game for it. I just don't know if I don't know how his how he'll feel that week in terms of the way he's playing.
And I kind of this is a I'll admit it, a weird take. I don't even know if it's fair. I want you to tell me if it's not, because you can't discount the wins. He's won three events this season. It's ridiculous the start he got off to. But I almost feel like I would feel better about it if he had sandwiched in more like he had a close call in Mexico, but I feel like to really make that leap into that Spieth category, and I don't mean major champion, I just mean like Jordan is always around the lead, almost always around the lead, somewhat involved in it, and JT does play that hot and cold card. And I brought this up with Rory on the podcast as well. Rory's won four majors without any real. He missed the playoff in 2010 at the PGA by one shot. He hasn't had really any other like really heartbreaking close calls in a major. I know he had the final round collapse at the 2011 Masters. That was before he had ever won a major, and he ended up losing by quite a few.
Yeah, he finished T15 there.
Right. He's never had that like I think he has one other top five in a major, if I remember right. I know he finished T4 at the Masters 1 year. He backdoored that. But I don't really know where I'm going with this take, other than it's weird that Rory is. I asked Rory if there was something to that, if there's something to having the four wins, and if there's, I don't want to say maybe a little bit of luck involved in that. I just feel like you're in control of getting yourself into contention. How it all plays out and how it all finishes, there is an element of luck. Now listen, winning by 8 shots at the PGA in the U.S. Open, that's hardly luck. And I wouldn't say Hoylake was at all luck, but there was definitely some luck factors that went into winning the PGA at Valhalla by 1. I have no idea how I ended up down this path or what I'm going to ask next on that. But that's what I have to say about that.
Well, the thing about that is, like, so golf, and this is what kind of irks me, like that people sometimes don't understand. It's all about, and you basically just said this, but it's all about giving yourself the most chances to win. And a lot of it's out of your control. Most of the time you're not going to win, but it's giving yourself the most best chances to win. Like it's not about the backdoor top tens. It's not about any of that. And so with Rory, every time he's given himself like the best chance to win, he's done it. So like he's like 4 for 4 basically, maybe 4 for 5, something like that. And then you look at somebody like, let's take like Ricky, he's like 0 for 2, you know, because if you look back at 2014, like a couple of those majors, like he didn't have a real chance. And then a couple of the others, he gave himself like the best chance, but it didn't like fall his way. So I totally understand what you're saying. But I think on the other side of that, you look at somebody like, look at Phil. Phil's got like 24 top, I think it's top 3 all time in major championships.
Jesus.
And he still only won 5 of them. And so it's I don't know. I think that like Rory at his very best has been better than like Phil at his very best. I don't really know where I'm going with this either. I'm just kind of talking. And I think we were talking about Justin Thomas, but I guess my point is I think Justin Thomas has the ability to give himself like this chance the way that Rory has, to where it's like, wow, I don't know if anybody's catching that this week. I mean, we saw that at Hawaii, and there's not a ton of guys like that out there.
And maybe the exact polar opposite of the example I gave with Rory is somebody like Sergio, who has 22 top 10s in majors, 12 top 5 finishes at majors without a win. And I don't know what, and I think maybe that's polar opposite as far as the guys on the major championship spectrum, Rory versus Sergio, and maybe there is really something to closing them out that I'm not fully understanding. But I just find it interesting. Again, I bring this up any chance I get to people, how much people need to like respect and realize how many majors, 4 majors, is for Rory to have had by the age of 25. So
I thought the polar opposite of Sergio was Todd Hamilton.
Yeah, how does that happen? Like honestly, it really does just make you wonder how these things happen. It's got to be so frustrating for somebody like Sergio to see some of the guys that have won majors. But
one of my favorite, I think Dylan Mays sent this last summer and said it's got to just burn Colin Montgomery to walk in the, you know, to walk past the champions locker room and see Todd Hamilton walking in.
Ben Curtis. Oh, God. All right, let's do some questions. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. We already did poor ass. That was the best one. Sorry.
That was incredible.
Sarah Endicott always has good questions. What is your worst case scenario outcome?
Probably Siwoo Kim Scott Piercy playoff.
Scott Piercy dick. Are you just checking? You're just doing the thing where we check names off the list to make sure they get said.
Yeah, and I've got the odds up, and I just like went to the bottom.
Siwoo Kim. What are Siwoo Kim's odds?
He's 400 to 1. Maybe Siwoo Kim and like Daniel Summerhays. I think friend of the pod DJ Pie is a Summerhays fan.
Okay.
No. I might just be making that up.
How is Summerhays in the Masters?
Didn't he win? I think he won like the Travelers. No, he won something. No, he finished top 4 at the PGA last year.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, Andy Knack, I think is the best way to say that. If Bubba wins his third green jacket using a pink golf ball, will you have to cancel the podcast?
Did you see the putter that he's rolling out?
Yes, I did. I did.
It's like a putter made from the material of a samurai sword, which sounds like a high-level marketing scheme, but somebody said, pray for Ted Scott. It's never been more appropriate.
If you had told me he was gonna, like, you gave me two options before today. If you just said he's gonna show up at the Masters with a putter made out of a samurai sword or one of the rubber ones that they hand out at putt putt courses, I probably would have gone with the putt putt one. I'm not gonna lie.
What, like, if him and okay, how about this? How about him and Zach Johnson are in a playoff against one another? Zach Johnson going for his third major to get within one of Rory. Both of them. Who are you rooting for?
Oh, man.
Bubba going for his third green jacket.
I got to root for ZJ, I think. I don't dislike ZJ as a person. There's nothing really to dislike there other than the fact that he blocked me despite I never tweeted at him. Bubba, I genuinely don't like. like, ZJ just lays up. That's his flaw. That's not the worst flaw in the world you could have. It's just kind of a thing that I have to hate that. I'm sorry. By all accounts, ZJ is a good guy. He just bores out of me.
He is a good guy. I'm just saying it's not a good week for your brand if ZJ is rolling off, you know, Master or Augusta, St. Andrews, Augusta again.
No, it's not. We already went over the worst case scenario. Okay, we're on to the next question. Mike Caverhill, should there be a camera on Jeff Knox Friday night as the cut is finalized?
ESPN should definitely get Knox involved, like, on Thursday, Friday. Like telling story. I mean, he could do anything, and I'd be locked in.
I'm wondering if we're going to kind of ruin this. Like, if he gets too big as a cult hero, if Augusta's going to move on down the list and, like, upgrade somebody else to that spot.
Yeah, but he's done a really good job of staying below the radar. Like I think he listens to all this stuff. Like, I think he's probably listening to this podcast, and I think he enjoys it, kind of the undergroundness of his fame. But he's done a good job of staying out of the spotlight.
So you tweeted a quote today that was from Spieth's 2014 presser. So Jason Barefoot asked, how long does it take Kyle Porter to dig through old presser transcripts, and have you seen your family recently?
Well, it does seem like I read every presser. I really don't. I was looking for a quote. I was writing about first-timers playing at Augusta, and I was looking for a quote because that was his first time to play there, and just seeing if he said anything about how, you know, if he needed more experience or whatever. I didn't find anything, but I did see him talking about number 12 a lot, so that was interesting.
Here's one from Quinn Gorski. Who's your dream Thursday-Friday featured group?
That's interesting.
I wonder on this, like, I want, if I'm going to pick two people that I want to win, I would probably pick Rory 1 and probably Spieth 2. I don't want them paired together. I don't think that they would both play their best if they're paired together the first two rounds. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It's true, I think. I mean, I think I've said this before, but Spieth annoys Rory, like, not as a human, but as a golfer, because he just slaps it around and he shoots like a 68. And you're like, what the hell? Like, what? Like, how did he do that? You know, and Rory's hitting like these Elon Musk level drives off the, you know, like into the stratosphere, and he's like 73 or whatever. It's just, he annoys him. Like, I don't see how he wouldn't.
You never hear Rory get like amazed at other people's game, other than that reaction that he had to Spieth last year and Phil this past year in Mexico. Like, how Phil shot 68 where he was, Rory's like, I would have shot 76 or whatever. That's the only time you ever see Rory amazed by other people.
Well, yeah, to be fair, I think Spieth saw, or Mickelson saw, like, every shrub in whatever course they were on. It was unbelievable. I was actually looking back through some tweets from that, and Adam Sarson just like screenshotted like all the shrubbery that Phil was in, and it was like, this man just shot a 69 in this tournament. I have no idea how it happened.
Nice.
I don't know, it'd be fun to see like a Rory, Adam Scott, Ricky. I think that would be like a really fun trio.
How many guys are there that, like, for you, and you don't have to name them all, but are, like, are you putting on your tracker? Like the Augusta leaderboard or whatever online lets you add a bunch of guys to your favorites. How many guys are, like, you looking up their tee time before they tee off? What's their, around what number?
Oh, there's probably, like, 6 to 8. No. Like, Spieth, Rory, JT, Phil, Ricky, and Sergio, something like that. Maybe Stenson.
No DJ?
Yeah. Did I not say DJ?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really listen. Okay. All right. Big Shark of 98 wants to know if you're up for a roast my swing session.
Oh yeah, I want that.
You want it?
I think I read all of the responses. They're incredible. Like,
it's amazing.
If we could somehow like bottle like the comedy that ensues from the roast. I mean, it's just. It's unfathomable to me that there are that many funny people out there. Like, as it relates to golf, even it's just the one of you, like, just sending it into the, what was that, the Black Sea, the North Sea? I don't know what sea that was.
It was the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay, well, it was incredible.
It was, and people, yeah, I'm amazed that people aren't like repeat. Like, I get there's some repeating jokes at this point, but people are coming up with fresh material every week and really bringing the heat. And the one we posted this week is one of my favorites. Goodman. he's like a good golfer. Like, he really is. He's the fastest golfer. Goodman's the fastest golfer you'll ever see. If you're like having a conversation with him between like the green, the second green and the third tee, you don't get to finish your sentence and he's teed off. It's the most remarkable, amazing thing you'll ever see. And he doesn't even care if you talk during his swing. Like, there's no distracting him. All right. Tucker Blankenship.
I read some of those to my wife, and even she doesn't really care, and she thought they were just unbelievable. It was great.
Tucker Blankenship wants to know the best hole at Augusta where no water is in play. I like this one.
Wow, that's a good question.
I think I like number two. Does that count? There's a creek that runs through there. I guess that's water.
No, that's what I was going to say. I like 2 a lot. I like
10?
Yeah, 10 would be my answer. I like 10 a lot.
Okay. That's
good. 10 then 2 for me.
Do you have one sleeper pick, Brad Bachman? Do you have one sleeper pick out someone outside the top 30 in the official world golf rankings that you may sneak up on us?
Yeah, well, I said Westwood. I think the other guy that I don't know if he's outside the top 30, it's barely. But Tomas Peters, like I could see him just. I mean, it's his first time, but he's a weird guy that it's his first time because he's played in a Ryder Cup. He's played a lot on the European Tour. Won the individual NCAA championship, so it's not a moment that I think will be too big for him. And you and I saw it in person at the Ryder Cup. He's clearly talented enough. So I think I don't know what he's ranked. I don't know if he's outside the top 30. He is 70-1 to win. So I think that'd be an interesting pick.
Have you been working on your Dutch pronunciations there, Tomas Peters?
I
thought it was just Thomas Peters. Is it not?
Is it?
I thought so. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm
the one that's supposed to be able to speak Dutch too, and I clearly do not. We didn't even talk about Rom. We just kind of. I didn't get to watch the match play because I had other things going on. But I mean, we're definitely not ruling him out of contending this week, are we?
No. He's 18-1.
Jesus.
It goes. DJ, Spieth, Rory, Rom.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I mean, that's not inaccurate. What's it? I think Jake Nicklaus has been the one that is like thinks that Rom is the best player in the world, like currently.
Wow, that's bold. His pedigree is. I think he was the longest ever world number one amateur. I think he was there for like 60 weeks. He's, you know, won the Farmers this year. He's awesome. He almost won Phoenix Open when he was at Arizona State. And I didn't totally know who he was back then. It's just like, this guy is unbelievable. Like, he just goes out there and plays. Like, he's sort of old school, like, Euro in that sense. And that he just, like, I don't know. He's kind of crazy, and he just, like, tries to hit it as far as he can and then scrambles. And just he's just a baller. Like, he's just awesome.
I'm so mad I missed that final match. Was it, I mean, did it live up to the hype?
Yeah, it was good. DJ sort of ran out of gas on Sunday. He only made like, I don't know, three or four birdies against Rahm. Rahm just made a bunch of mistakes early. I think he was like just out of his mind, hyped up, thinking about taking down DJ and getting inside the top 10 and all that stuff. But I mean, both of those guys are just, they've got another gear. Like, they're both just awesome.
We'll get you out of here on these two questions. What are you packing at the bottom of the suitcase in case you get the call on Monday for the media draw? What's the script? What's the scripting?
Well, it's not Augusta camo like Ricky Fowler's wearing, or whatever that was called, flagstick camo, I think is what it was.
Will you wear a white belt just to just incite the rage that would come from golf Twitter?
I'm with you on the white belt. Like, it's we've gone too far the other way.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I just went from being so overrated that now it's, I think it's a little underrated. I'm not scared of Tron coming at me. I'm fine with that.
You should have seen Tron's reactions in England to any comments anybody made about his outfits. So, like, I posted something on Instagram in between one of our rounds, and I just, like, read some of the things people were saying about his khakis. And he was playing well, and I'm not joking, he fell apart. Like, he absolutely fell apart. He could not handle it. It was hysterical.
Tron acts like he's, like, the editor of, like, Vogue magazine or something. Like, he acts like he's, like, this fashionista, and he, like, dabbles in other stuff. Like, it's incredible. I got some unreal Tron takes when we were in Florida, by the way. We just went to... We went to get some food with Porath and Sean Martin, and we would just feed Tron we would just give him a topic, and I'd say I'd really like to hear your take on that, Tron, and like 20 minutes later he was wrapping up like anything, like healthcare, Bernie Sanders, like it was all over the map. It was incredible.
Oh, it's too good. All right, last one. What are you and Bacon shooting if you do get that Monday media draw? That's from Colton Davis.
Yeah, that's a good question.
You're playing the member tees.
Yeah, Bacon would shoot a, I don't know, 73?
Probably.
Something
like
that.
I wouldn't be surprised if he shot lower than that. The member tees are only like 6,400 yards.
70? I could see Bacon shooting a 70. I played with him at a... U.S. Open qualifying course here in Dallas a couple of years ago, and I played pretty well, and I shot like an 88 or something, and he played from the tips. I was playing from the just regular tees. He played from the tips, and he was keeping score, and I saw his card afterwards said 70. I was like, geez, maybe you should stick around for the qualifier.
Shot a hole.
I'd be happy to break 100. I played Oakmont the day after. I don't know if I told anybody that, but I played Oakmont the day after the U.S. Open and parred the first. Thought I was going to break 70 from the. We played from the tips.
You were crowd waving to the cars as you walked over the bridge after that par on the first.
Oh yeah, they actually had to. FEMA had to be brought in to clean up the tour sauce on the highway there. But I don't know what I ended up shooting. It was not pretty though. I mean, that's the thing. Like you can hit, even if it's, what is it? Would you say 7,000 from the member tees?
No, it's like 6,400 or something like that.
Oh geez.
Yeah. It's a different course,
but that's the thing. Like even if you're 10 feet away, you can still make like a double, you know, on if you're 10 feet away after two shots. So I would not putt well, and I would be happy to break 100.
Well, I kind of hope you get the chance, but will be pretty jealous if you do. So I don't know. I'm not totally all in on you getting the draw. So
I got real quick the first year that I got hired at CBS, I followed Bacon. Bacon used to be the golf writer there, and he moved on, and he was really kind, him and Jonathan Wall were really kind to put in a good word for me, and that's how I got the job. And I was like, man, these are some good dudes. And I asked Bacon later on, because I thought I was going to go to the Masters. I didn't end up going, but I asked him, I said, so if you go to the Masters as a media member, do you get to is there a chance you could play the course? And he said, oh yeah, there is. And then a couple of minutes later, he texted again and said, by the way, if you get that, I'm going to send you anthrax in the mail. And
you told this exact story last year, but it was ricin. So I don't know which one it was.
I forgot what it was.
I'm smiling here as I just re-listened to that this like today to prepare for this. And you told this, I was like, I hope he like takes this story to a different level this year. That's going to be the every year we do this preview. I want you to like up the ante for what Bacon was going to how he was going to kill you.
It's actually a bomb in the box.
All right, let's wrap it on that before we lose your credential. Kyle, as always, thank you for helping us preview. If it's not too soon, I'd like to do some kind of recap as well. You're the master of the recap. Oh, one more question we did get. I don't remember who it was from, but they wanted to know how you're ever going to follow up on your tweet from last year of I have seen unspeakable things.
I thought about that. I mean, it's so weird to be out on the course and not have any, like, you can just, your mind just goes like crazy places, because if you feel naked, like you don't have your phone, you can't shoot off these fire takes during the round. And I don't know. I hope I don't have to see that stuff again, though.
So, all right, man, enjoy the week. Thank you for the time, and best of luck in the draw.
Absolutely. If I don't talk to you, we'll see you later on here in about a month or so.
Yep. See you at the Players. Cheers, man.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect